sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
Yeah, they said, and the doctor really likes it because they get a really immersive experience that they can interact with as if they're in an operating room, but they don't have to leave their office, and they see the device, how it's working. They see another device, another doctor working with it, and because it's 360, they get the whole experience of everyone in the room working together, and they can zoom in on whatever they want. So those are the kind of rich experiences that are self-service that we help our customers create content, but we're actually not in the content business. We built the tools to allow people to create, to do this by themselves. So we're helping people get into the metaverse, if you allow my definition of the metaverse to include non-Zuckerberg-defined interactions. Everything outside of that, we're very much in the VR world and that world.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. That was Kurt Kratchman. Kurt is the CEO at Verti, and Verti's on a mission to improve human performance by making experiential training affordable and accessible to everyone. In our conversation today, Kurt and I talk about what experiential learning is, what immersive learning is, and how it differs from the training that most salespeople are receiving now. We dig into how his customers are using this experiential immersive experiences to transform how they train and enable sales teams. We also explore what sales leaders should be doing to create a culture of learning within their organizations. So we get into all of this and much, much more. But before we get to Kurt, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So thank you, and let's jump into it. Kurt, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andy. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. So you're joining us from France today.
I am. I'm in the south of France. I'm in the just outside of Montpellier on the beach. I'm actually in a hotel lobby. I've got a friend here who's staying here. He's about 15 minutes from my house, so I just came to visit him for a little bit, and the time worked out really well. They have also good internet, so I can talk to you from here. I hope it looks okay and sounds okay.
Yeah. Well, we're mostly concerned with the audio today. We'll do a little. We'll take a clip from the video to use for promotion purposes, but mostly audio. It's good. So south of France, Montpellier, on the beach. Sounds great.
Yeah, I am lucky. I mean, look, in the remote world, you can be lots of different places.
Oh, working. Yeah.
But also our business is global, and I just spent last week in the UK. So it was easy to go from France to the UK and then back again. It's just an hour and a half, hour and 15 minute flight. And so that was convenient. And I have a team that's there, so I got to see them and a lot of customers. Being with customers is a great feeling, which hasn't happened, as you know, for a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I was just talking to somebody about this last week. I was talking to a gentleman whose company runs, they have an application for field sales. And so I sort of used him as sort of like canary in the coal mine during the pandemic, talk about, you know, what he saw with regard to field sales, because he was working with organizations. His customers are all companies, huge field sales organizations. And so I had him just talking to him last week, and he said, yeah, you know, our business is up 40% over the last 6 months because people are going back out to see customers again. Customers want sellers to come visit them. I mean, virtual is great. We can get a lot done virtually. You and I both know we've been selling virtually for decades. Is nothing replaces actually being able to visit and meet somebody face to face.
100%. I've been doing SaaS sales for the past 10 years, if not more. And even it's business SaaS. Sure. It always happens in person. Right. All the deals get set up in person. Yeah, yeah. This software might be demoed. It might be used. It might be deployed. Yes, it's cloud-based, and the pricing model is SaaS. But the sale is still done with the humans. Now, would I like to make a self-service product that someone can just log into, use, and get paid and never have to talk to a human being again? I don't think so, because I still like the fun of the – I like the whole fun of the process. Maybe we'll evolve to that point that something can be so self-service, but not for – at least not for the type of applications that I've been around or been part of building. They've always required a certain amount of discussion, conversation, being confronted with challenges or unique situations, unique integration, security protocols, all those kind of things that require CTOs and CIOs and other stakeholders to be involved with. But also too, with ISO and other types of compliance and other type of risk assessments, all SaaS businesses still have to go through, if it's core to somebody's company, they've got to go through a human process of consultation.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, some people would make the argument that, sure, we can do that all virtually and remotely and use Zoom or whatever. My point is that, sure, of course you can. But if you have the opportunity to go meet them face to face, and I put this challenge to people, I said, if you and I are competing on a deal and let's say it's worth, $500,000, $250,000, whatever. If I go visit and you don't, I like my odds of winning the deal.
I concur. I mean, I'll just speak to what I did last week in the UK. Mm-hmm. It was a really big deal for those companies who I met with, both in healthcare and publishing, as well as hardware, that I visited them in person. I've spoken with them for the last year and a half on the telephone. Mm-hmm. And we had a fine relationship. And we actually do some business. But being there has accelerated everything. Being there, and you know what we talked about over lunch or dinner? Nothing business related.
Soccer, hopefully.
Families.
Yeah.
Life. personal ambitions.
Yep.
Politics. Human issues. It felt like conversations in humanities. It felt like I was with people at a restaurant or at a bar, or you would meet for the first time, and they were just conversations that were really that touch on a lot of things that you talk about that connection and that curiosity and understanding. And then, of course, when we got to things that we wanted to make sure that we were on track to do, it becomes that generosity, because ultimately I'm there to help them solve a problem that they have.
Right.
And of course, if my solution set helps them, great. There's obviously a value exchange. But a lot of times what I sell, I'm only part of the solution. There's just it's a much more complex set of pieces. And I'll often be involved because of my past experience giving them advice or telling them about these other pieces that could be good and useful to look at. And even in our company Vertu, although we are a SaaS business that people can buy us as a standalone, we are only as good as our ecosystem partners that we work together on content and hardware. That's what makes our product work. And so I have to have a point of view about content and hardware and have to know the landscape and have to educate my customer about it, because the world of VR is super confusing.
Right. Well, so we sort of jumped ahead, but tell us what you do and who you work for so on.
Sure. So Vertu is an immersive learning company. By immersive, our definition means, yes, we can use VR. Yes, we can use avatars. But it's this idea where you're not just reading. Books can be immersive, but oftentimes what we're finding is when you're interacting with the content, that draws you in. And that basically creates a focus. You're not multitasking on your phone. Although our product does work on mobile phones and web browsers, the richest experience is when people do put on a headset.
Right.
And we work with almost every headset company out there, but we work really closely with HTC at the level of product development.
Mm-hmm.
And HTC is out of Taiwan. And in fact, HTC has exclusivity over our software in all of APAC. So they actually sell on our behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And so we help them. We help build product that they can sell better. And then we have our own sales teams in North America and in Europe. But what we do is we are bringing immersive learning to the enterprise at scale in a very cost-effective way. And while we hear a lot about the metaverse, we hear a lot about, all these CGI environments and using avatars to talk together, that's actually not what we do at all. We are very straightforward. Like we have two major products. One is interactive video. So it's like 360 video, which everyone has experienced. You can look around a space and up and down, and you can feel like you're in it. And we also have these avatars that have natural language processing that you can talk to. Right. And we use them for diagnostics, for diagnostic training. So our company was founded by Dr. Alex Young, who's a medical doctor who came out of Bristol in the UK. And he came out, and he's a surgeon, and he felt himself that although he has the credentials to operate, he did not feel as well trained as he could have been on certain areas.
Right.
And he asked others, would you want me as your doctor coming out of this, you know, I'm legally can do these things to you, but I do not have enough training in these particular areas, and my soft skills need improvement, or power skills and other areas. So he used VR. He on his spare time, he built out a prototype of ways to improve and engage in simulation training.
Mm-hmm.
And simulation training is a big part of the healthcare industry.
Right. Yep.
Sim center at every hospital has a simulation center. You practice sometimes on mannequins, sometimes on patients, sometimes on actors. And so what we've done is taken a lot of those processes and moved them into 360 video and using avatars. So we've created simulations of the simulations that are now used in sim centers globally.
Yeah.
And we sold into many hospital systems in the US, many in the UK and NHS, and then some in the Middle East. And certainly we've got about 30 installations in JPAC as well with HTC. And so so I've come in as the CEO because Alex has this amazing ability to really penetrate the healthcare industry. And when they raised the A round, I came in and I said, look, this is really... there's lots of other industries that could benefit from this type of simulation training.
Right.
And yes, diagnostics for nurses and doctors are really important, but so are diagnostic tools for sellers.
Yeah.
Like when you're selling something, essentially what I'm doing with my customers, patients, I'm doing a diagnostic. I'm understanding what the business issues are, the pain. I'm understanding what the value is of being fixed.
Right.
Of being corrected, right? Like I quantify that. I try to understand that prospect has the power to say yes or no, and if not, who in their organization does, and I work around that, and I create a plan of activities of protocols, if you will, that then move us into a mutual agreement about dates and other things, and that kind of, I mean, that's sort of a methodology of value selling, but in many ways, that's what a diagnostic is in the medical industry, trying to guess as quickly as possible by process of elimination or deduction what it is that this person is struggling with.
Right.
And so that requires not only technical skills and knowledge, but it also requires self skills, our power skills, the ability to communicate. Not just, you can't be aggressive, you have to be empathetic, but you also have to get information from someone who also might not be coherent. They might be on a lot of drugs or a bad combination on drugs.
Sounds like some of my customers.
Yeah. So I've taken those same ideas and I've tried to translate them to the commercial marketplace. And lo and behold, it's been successful. Mm-hmm. Like we have now these corporate customers that we couldn't have imagined 6 months ago or a year ago when we just started moving into these other adjacent markets. And so while I'm not going to name them, I don't want to be like, you know, I don't want to get into that. You know, if they just, for a little company like ours to get the attention of all these and we sell into the L&D teams, like learning development, subset of HR. Sometimes we sell into sales teams, COOs, CIOs, others, because once our technology becomes incorporated into the infrastructure of the organization, it requires, you know, a more of a technical audit and a security audit and those kind of things. So those buyers will be involved. Procurement's involved, so we have to sell to them too. But we're selling to a lot of different people, not just the business stakeholder. And why people are buying us originally was because of the need for remote learning.
Right.
A lot of doctors and nurses couldn't go to the simulation centers.
Yep.
And a lot of people who were training, who were hiring people even remotely, didn't have the onboarding tools or the training tools. A lot of people still train in person, which is high fidelity, but it's expensive. It takes time to travel.
Yep.
And so we've replaced this with this hybrid sort of learning approach where you can do it through our virtual program. And so I have to practice what I preach, and I've been building sales teams for 20 years in different forms, from professional services to consulting to technology. And all the way through to, you know, just, you know, SaaS software sellers in lots of different verticals, And my last, before I did this, I was at Oracle, and I was at Oracle because they acquired our company, Grapeshot, which is a data company. Mm-hmm. And so I've been both at startups all the way to enterprise, and the same process has been working, the same issues around training people. And so when I said this, I said, we have to use this for our own staff. And I was onboarded through Verity. And here's what I experienced, Andy. Now, when I came in, I didn't create the content. It was already created by the team that was there. Mm-hmm. When I got to learn the culture, mm-hmm. learn all the business processes, learn sort of who's who for what, and we were a relatively small team. We're only 35 people, so it's not a really huge organization, right. But it's all remote. Right. Nobody has ever met each other. And what makes our company stick is the culture. And the culture has to be embedded into the content. And so I'm with a headset on and I'm like, oh, this is what these people look like in their house, in their rooms, and this is our office, and here's right. our software. And then how we are doing selling. We use sort of the challenger selling methodology, and we sort of teach that in the basis, but we also are teaching the fundamentals of learning and development mm-hmm. and education and what it's like, you know, in health situations. And then we have a lot of content from our customers to help us be empathetic about what they're training on, mm-hmm. which, you know, they're training on surgeries and on diagnostics. So we see a lot of that content. And because it's immersive and it's question and answers and it's responsive and you have to click on lots of things, you're really quite engaged. And if you're with a headset on, you're in a space and you're moving around. So, I don't know if you've ever experienced a headset and immersive experience.
Just once, but it's pretty short.
But it's rich. Yeah. That's all I can say. And you don't have to be on it for many hours. You just have to be on it for 10 minutes or 15 minutes to really get a fully, you know, immersive experience. Right. So that has been really valuable for the organization for onboarding. And here's what's been valuable for the selling part. Then we started focusing in on how can we get our sales team in time to value. When we were at Oracle, it used to take sellers about 6 months mm-hmm. to get to value. At most of my companies, we give people about 3 months. Yeah. At Verity, we gave people about 1 month. And we're now at the point where it's about 7 days where people can be hired. They go through our training. Mm-hmm. And by business day 7, they're ready to go out and sell. And why that's important
for us. Well, when you say ready,
us,
meaning what's the benchmark for sales readiness for you?
Okay. So sorry about the background noise. I'm near a bar. The ready to sell means that they can prospect, that they can pitch, that they can take someone through a demo, and they can get someone to yes. And the yes meaning typically a POC. Mm-hmm. And so that's what, now the training doesn't stop at 7 days, right? We have actually a curriculum that lasts for 8 weeks, but the people they don't have to wait till the eighth week mm-hmm. to start being productive. That's what I want to answer your question, but that's what I meant by 7 days.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is one thing I sort of find very curious, because there's this idea of sales readiness or, you know, full productivity or whatever within, as you said, within 3 months, 6 months. But I wonder if isn't that sort of a false narrative to some degree? And this is more speaking more generally, and you've been in sales for a long time. That's why I wanted to ask the question, is that people learn at different rates, right? And I find people being in organizations being flushed more quickly than perhaps they should because, you know, hey, this person just takes longer to come up to speed, or, you know, we learn or adapt at different rates. And we've also seemed to have lost this whole idea of sales really being an apprenticeship, which it really is. I mean, as craft, it.
Okay, I concede. You're right on every point. You're right on every point.
I wasn't what I was trying to do, but yeah, go ahead.
No. But let me qualify why I was sort of pitching this notion of a reduction of time.
Yeah.
Is that the two attributes that we really focus on at Verity is skill fade reduction,
okay.
right? And a sense of memory retention. They sound like they're one and the same things, but they're actually a little bit
different. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So skill fade reduction,
memory,
the forgetting
skills,
curve.
So right. So if you're learning something technical, diagnostics, right. or what it might be, once you learn something, if you're not putting it into practice on a routine basis, your retention of those diagnostic skills are going to go down
right.
really quickly
right.
unless you keep practicing. So the ability to keep back to the software whenever you want on your own time, without having to have a study buddy or anybody else, is really valuable. And that is a reduction that allows the end user to keep training on their own time, which is what our platform's about. Anytime, wherever you are, and you get high fidelity training at no extra cost. It's unlimited usage, all that kind of stuff. And that's why it's used at universities and at hospital systems and whatnot.
And just that's the important qualifier, as you said, you don't need to have a VR headset.
It works on your mobile phone. Right. So if you think of like a chatbot, right, that you've used before, you can talk to it, but you can also just use it like texting.
Right.
You know, and it'll ask you questions and back and forth. Inside the web browser, it's just like WebGL or like a web browser. Mm-hmm. But yeah. And if you're in the headset, then you get this really immersive experience.
Right.
With the memory retention, this is another thing. You and I will learn something. And tomorrow we will forget it.
I guarantee it,
if we don't continue to practice it. And because of the way that we have our instructional design built into the software, it has all the sort of the tricks to sort of sear in different ways of gamification, of competition, of time, of eye tracking, of what you're focused on. So the instructional designer can build in all these sort of preferred tools mm-hmm. and sort of standardized tools that allow for memory retention. And that's the DNA. That's the data that's part of our platform.
Right.
So when you're building courses, you're not just recording a video. You're then putting all these layers on top of it, all these interactive elements. It could be video on video, it could be layers of media on top of it, it could be questions, it could be quizzes, all the kind of things that you would do in instructional design. And so all of those are the sort of the hacking ways to get
a silverware cascade. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very much in a hotel lobby. Yeah. You can get very much those reinforced through the instructional design. And so that helps with memory retention.
Right.
And those are the two things that we're looking for. I want them to continue to practice because they like it and they're competing against others. And there's a lot of you can see your other people who you're competing with, part of your company. If it's a broader cohort, you can see how people are doing around the country, around the world on that particular topic. But yeah, that's what I meant by memory retention and skill fade reduction.
So I know you don't want to name names of companies, but give us an example of how one of your clients, if they use it for, enabling their sales team.
Yeah. So it's a prestigious franchise company. Mm-hmm. It's a franchise that owns 8 brands. Mm-hmm. Each of these brands have to do with home services, garage door, automatic garage door replacement, painting, renovating your kitchen, mm-hmm. renovating your bathroom, junk removal.
Right.
Right. These are all services that have to do with home repairs. They have a national franchise of that with these 8 or 9 brands. They keep acquiring brands, so it could be 10 by now. But they roll out about 10 franchises a month.
Right.
New franchises. So you can imagine each franchise has anywhere between 5 and 20 people associated with it. Those franchises, people who buy franchises are oftentimes successful business people who are ready to retire, but they have some capital, but they don't want to necessarily, they still want to be involved in some business, but they'd like to make some passive revenue. Mm-hmm. They'll invest in a franchise, hire a manager who runs the business day to day, and then they'll help out with sort of setup, structure, mm-hmm. sort of oversight, legal fees, legal licenses, things like that. And so these teams, the franchise brand operator is responsible as part of their license to train the franchisors, the operators and their management teams. Mm-hmm. And the way historically that they do it is they come to the headquarters for 3 weeks to 4 weeks to do formal training, like McDonald's University.
Yep.
Or anything else, they're all part of the learning and development of how to run a successful franchise. This forward-thinking company, not just because of COVID, but because they believe in their operating model, is better designed if they can move their training into Verti and push that out at the local level to the franchises by recording really high-quality work. And then the franchises also have coaches who are out in the field. They're like regional coaches mm-hmm. who go around. And then the coaches come in and work with them in local settings.
Right.
So that saves them on the 3 weeks or 4 weeks on the travel, all that commitment, allows them to get up and going faster. And that's and so why that sales training because these are oftentimes a lot of these people are in the trades of kitchen renovation or painting or garage, you know, technical garage repairs. But these folks are also responsible now for
business development,
doing the assessments, at the front door, doing the proposal at the kitchen table. This is selling.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And these are the skills that they don't really, they're not comfortable with, and they don't really know how to do. And so they've taken their operating model with Verity, and we've moved these, not only the technical training, but also the sales training into this model. And you'd be surprised how similar it is to what you call power skills mm-hmm. and soft skill training, mm-hmm. but also following a script.
Yeah.
And also making sure that while there's room for ad lib and there's room for soft skills, what they found formula and formula again is that when they stay on the script and ask the right questions the right way, they get the optimal results. Mm-hmm. It's when the trainer learns from another trainer and it keeps getting reduced because it keeps getting modified until it's freeform, that those franchises have a less successful outcome than the ones who sort of stay on script. Mm-hmm. And by using our software and reinforcing, you're always staying on script because you're not changing the script. That's an example of a franchise industry. There are other examples in the corporate industry that are less sales but more leadership mm-hmm. training and more around skill, leadership skills, soft skill communication,
right.
difficult conversations,
right.
diversity, equity, inclusion, sensitivity training, all those kind of things. Put yourself in the other person's shoes. Have difficult conversations with managers, for new managers, for other managers. So it's a lot of that kind of role mm-hmm. playing that is really that virtual reality is really good for.
Well,
practicing with a virtual body.
Right. Well, so if you were to project, and because I said you've been in the sales business for a long time, and say, okay, you've got this tool. If you could envision just how sales training should evolve, right? Because there's general consensus that we invest a ton in sales training, but if you ask most C-level executives, they say, yeah, we're not getting the return on it that we need. How would you fix that using Verity?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm not convinced that our solution is going to fix that. I think we solve a part of the problem. I think we are additive.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are a useful, cost-effective tool for part of the problem, but I think it has to be combinatory. Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll ever be in a situation. I hope we're never in a world where we don't have
face-to-face.
Mentors
yeah.
and mentees and people giving live feedback. But I also think that there are masters and master classes and masterful ways of doing things using content to create scale mm-hmm. and interactivity to improve memory and skill fade reduction.
Right.
And I believe that those tools are useful in the form of an immersive environment where you feel like you're in the game or you feel like you're in the
right.
space. And that creates a sense of stress and drama that really is you can't get unless you're in a real life battle, mm-hmm. so to speak, right? That's where I think this tool that we're doing is really good, because if I can record a live customer interaction done in a dynamic way that really feels authentic, I can learn so much from observing
mm-hmm.
that. Now, you know, is that now in some industries that sort of those parameters are relatively cookie cutter, and you can find the ideal customer profile all over again with that same formula, and that
right.
works really well. There's going to be some industries where that won't. That is, it's too dynamic. It's too contextual.
Mm-hmm.
It's too specific to a certain type of, and it just won't be able to be repeated.
Right.
But what I'm finding, Andy, and this is early. Now, remember, we haven't been at this for more than
right.
a couple of years. But in my conversations with pharma, with medical device companies, I mean, adjacent industries
right.
to healthcare that have already adopted
right.
us, we're really well adopted in hospital systems and universities attached to hospital systems. They great because their whole intervention methodologies lend themselves really well to moving them into our
mm-hmm.
platform. But when I'm now trying to do this with medical device companies as well as with pharmaceutical, and the way that they sell through
yep.
education. They sell through experience, right? And sometimes they've got to demo products, and their demos unless they're there physically with them, or sometimes in the operating room, they can't get the full story across. And sometimes by doing it in 360, recording it, what we're doing, it's proven really effective for them. And what they do, they load the content on the headset and they send it to the doctor.
Send the headset to the doctor.
Yeah, they said, and the doctor really likes it because they get a really immersive experience that they can interact with as if they're in an operating room, but they don't have to leave their office, and they see the device, how it's working. They see another device, another doctor working with it, and because it's 360, they get the whole experience of everyone in the room working together, and they can zoom in on whatever they want. So those are the kind of rich experiences that are self-service that we help our customers create content, but we're actually not in the content business. We've built the tools to allow people to do this by themselves. Right. So we're helping people get into the metaverse, if you allow my definition of the metaverse to include non-political, Zuckerberg-defined interactions. Everything outside of that, we're very much in the VR world and that world. So,
well, it's a great thought, though. Great thought. Your example about shipping. As a salesperson, you ship a VR headset to a customer to get them to experience.
And I can get onto that headset with them, and I can actually get on that headset with them and be there.
Yeah, now see, I think that's really interesting.
That's wacky, right? I mean, that is the whole sort of wormhole experience that we're envisioning that will grow. But I will tell you right now, that's a very limited situation. Still today, it's crawl, walk, run, right? Right now, we spend an inordinate amount of time just educating our customers about the ecosystem. Hardware, content, software. That's our first step. A lot of our customers have never put on a headset. They're all mandated by their organization to figure out how VR can play a role in their sales or training organization, but they don't necessarily know where to start. So the first thing we have to do is just try to help them anchor themselves. So that's the connection and the curiosity and the understanding and the generosity at work, right? Those are the things that we're doing every day. Yes, we want to close a deal, but we also realize that some buyers are still learning about what this world is. So that's the maturity spectrum. And we're very early on in the growth of what this will be. I still think we're a few years ahead of the market.
Right.
That being said, that's why when we work really closely with our partners like HTC, when people are already shopping for hardware, they've already invested in the idea. And now, oftentimes, they don't realize they create a bespoke piece of content, and then they forget that they have to buy hardware for it. And hardware costs money, right? On the cheaper end of the spectrum, it's a few hundred bucks, and the more expensive end, it can be a couple thousand, right? But it's somewhere, let's say the sweet spot for really high quality professional B2B VR hardware is in the $700 zone. Okay, so then the next question is, well, do you buy a headset for everybody in my company, or do you just buy five of them and let people share, or 50, or whatever it is? Fine, well, I don't care how many you actually buy. But you need to have content, because the hardware without is like, a computer without applications, right? And so what we do two things. We have a lot of off-the-shelf content through both that we've created, our partners have created, and there's a lot of content creators who create content on our platform. So we have a lot that's there that people can just use off the shelf. But most of our customers need bespoke, custom content that's relevant to their brand. And what they really like is that now that they see other people's content, now they want to make their own. And so they've got two choices. They can hire a boutique content creation agency, create the content, put it onto using our platform and put it on there, or the customer can do it themselves with an Insta 360 camera or a GoPro and a storyboard and a script, and they create it themselves. And that's what our customers do. Almost all of our healthcare customers make their own content. And we have customers in Texas, for example, at a hospital system in Houston. They have over 1,500 simulations on our platform of surgeries. They record every surgery, and they make them interactive modules. The doctors are giving voiceovers. Then the instruction designers are then pointing out all the key things to look out for. And they use them like sports teams use films to study a game. The doctors then say, oh, this is what I did right, this is what I did wrong, this is what the anesthesiologist did, and then the learning instructional designer creates Q&As and hotspots so that the learner can see what went right and what went wrong so they can improve for their next time. That's it. Yeah. Man. Well, that's how it works.
Yeah. So now there's been this wave of conversational intelligence platforms and sales or recording calls, you know, so you can, you know, deconstruct calls, analyze calls, but you're not seeing the person necessarily. I mean, you can with Zoom calls, you see some, but yeah, I think Degree can make that more immersive. That would, yeah, I'm just sort of thinking that'd be very powerful.
Like one of the things I would sell you on is how can I make one of your books like a course, and how can I make that a program? Okay, well, I won't sell you.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it after we finish recording.
No. Right. But you get my point. Like, there's all these subject matter experts who have used traditional media or interactive media or PowerPoints or PDFs or videos or other types of things. And what we're now we have this subset of professionals who are now building content on our platform, who are taking basically what they do at their live training seminars, they're recording them, and they're adding additional, and they're basically layering media up to create sort of this hyper media experience inside our platform. And then that becomes part of the curriculum that then they have a distribution channel that they can go sell out and have and it's got to work. I mean, it's got to be thoughtful how you think about a VR experience. You just can't take flat content and 2D. I mean, you can take 2D content and make it interactive. But then the question is, well, why use us for that? There's lots of other things you can use for that. When you get into the immersiveness of the video and you get into the diagnostic tools of the avatars and you bring them together, that's where the magic happens. And that's what we call the learner's journey. So the learner's journey starts with situational awareness. They get into the context of the situation. They see what's going on. So we have a customer who does, you know, they run services for airlines at airports. So think of baggage handlers and think of the engineers and all that on the ramp. All that's done, you know, a lot of that training is done because these are hourly contract workers, high turnover, and safety is paramount. Safety is a really big deal. And, you know, they're fueling planes and they're handling bags and inclement weather. And it's a very dynamic environment of having equipment all around you. And so they use our platform as part of their training curriculum.
I like it.
Because that 360 works really well in those environments and they get situational awareness. And then they move over to the next part of the journey, which is the diagnostics. And then the third part is the in-classroom training and, you know, and discussions and the sort of the group training.
Well, I mean, it overlays directly into sales. I mean, you're talking about situational awareness, which so many sellers are lacking because they have been trained just to follow this process, right? Full speed ahead. This is the process. It's not being aware of where they are, sort of the OODA loop, you know, approach to things. Okay. Triggered a lot of thoughts.
And again, I wish I would say that this was like a slam dunk and we figured out every problem here, but we're not. The reality is we're learning new use cases all the time. And I'm suggesting that this is not, your podcast is around sales. And of course I want to talk about that and selling, but a lot of it is still, like you said, around sometimes we foist upon our sales teams, well, here's how the CEO founder did it. And this is what got them success. So just copy that. Or here's a script that works for me. Will it work for you? A lot of that is trial and error. Yep. Or read a book by XYZ who created some version of predictive revenue concept, and that doesn't apply anymore. Or it doesn't apply, you know, the SDR, BDR handoff to the AE, to the sales engineer, to the maybe in some cases that still is useful, but I've tried that and it doesn't work. It's not working for us as much. So we have to constantly try to iterate and learn. And I told you that I sort of immersed my own team in our own software. And part of our team's requirement to be able to sell is that they've got to create their own simulations. Mm-hmm. And so we have team members who have their personal hobbies, whether it's skydiving or guitar playing or, you know, or even target shooting. And they all build 360 simulations around all their personal stuff. And it's sort of remarkable how much I learn about something when I can see everything that's going on, not just like some images or some sketches or a PowerPoint presentation. And I hear it and I get this, I sense it's very palpable. Or we have done some demos where even we've used actors and I was like, okay, this isn't great. They're actors. We have to work with real customers and do some live sessions and see how that goes because that's authentic. And it might be a little bit rough and sloppy and it might not exactly be perfect, but at least At least it's real. And then we can deconstruct that. And you made a comment earlier that I thought was what I see quite often is, you know, the call recordings. We use tools like Fathom, Note Taker, or things that you can do, you know, like in Zoom, you can record the Zoom call and it takes the notes and it has a transcription. We can read all that. And while that's helpful and interesting, and it allows me to sort of, you know, have a bird's eye view on what my seller's doing, or helps me through my CRM to get up to speed on an account because I can watch a video. What's really valuable is when I can take clips of those little moments and assemble them into our platform, and then have a thoughtful statement about it. Like, here's a best practice, or here's a pattern, or here's something. But, you know, it does require work. Right. It requires effort. I mean, sales training is not easy. Like, it requires attention to detail.
Constantly, yeah. And constant.
Yeah. But once you do set up this content, the nice thing is you can get it out to a lot of people really quickly. And that's really cool.
Very cool. All right, Kurt, we sort of run out of time here, but that's okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry if I
mean, if people don't know, we actually talked for a long time before we started recording. I think we might have missed some good stuff there, but we'll have you back. We'll talk more about it. So if people want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so we're at Verti.com, V-I-R-T-I.com. You can get me, Kurt, K-U-R-T, at Verti.com. Of course, hit us up on our website, do a demo, call us. We'd love to engage. We just love to talk to you about what we're seeing in the market. We don't have all the answers, but we're certainly generous with sharing and with educating the market about what we're doing. And we also have a great partnership ecosystem. So if we can't solve it for you, we're certainly happy to introduce you to the right people just so you can cut through the noise.
All right. Well, Kurt, have a great day in south of France.
All right. Merci, Andy. Au revoir.
A bientôt.
A tutelo. Bye.
Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. As always, I'm so grateful for your support of the show. And I want to thank our guest, Kurt Kratchman, for sharing his insights with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So thank you for your help with that. And as always, thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.